episode, recording on the 14th of April 2019, for release on the 16th of April 2019, episode 22, and this is your fortnightly look at manga. We're focused on drink discussion. We have a pair of pretty interesting series coming up tonight, in fact, one of which I did not see coming in any way, and the other one I did, but in a different way than I thought, so we'll see. My name is Elliot Page, and joining me as always is my lovely co-host, Mr. Andy Hanley. How you doing, Andy?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. As we were talking about before the show starts, it's almost Easter, but it swings and roundabouts because where I work, we don't get the Easter days off. But on the plus side, we did get some cream eggs brought to the office the other day, so I'm taking that as a net win.
Well, that's good. Yeah, everyone's already buggered off for like half-term slash end-of-term time where I work, so... It's already really quiet, so the next week's probably going to be useful because it'll be quiet, but also torture because it'll be too quiet, and I don't do well when it's quiet. So we'll see. Also, it's appraisal season, so please just shoot me.
Yeah, that's always a joy.
Yeah, it's always a mess. More importantly than appraisal season is manga season, open season all year round. If you want to have more manga, even more to listen in this manga season, you can subscribe to us on Patreon from just $1 a month, and that will get you some extra bonus episodes we record. On that note, today is the closing date for the voting process, which patrons get to vote on what we cover for the bonus episodes. And this one has been a sword hanging over our head for a few months now, and I've been waiting for it to drop. I forget what the reference, the biblical or historical reference is to this. Sort of Damocles, I guess?
Yes, that was what I was going to
say. Yes, my permacultured co-host there. So this is the light novel, which, again, has been hanging over our head for a while. It is... Do You Love Your Mum and Her Two-Hit Multi-Target Attacks, Volume 1. So, yeah, this has been sort of we've been threatened with this, and apparently it's not as bad as the dumb title warns, but we shall see. So, we've got another light novel to cover. Hopefully it's not as bad as Smartphone was, but hey, there's always, you know, lightning can strike twice, I suppose. But yeah, that's we're going to be covering that and reading it over the next week in a bit, and then recording an episode by the end of the month. If you want to help decide what we're going to read after that, you can join us on Patreon, as mentioned. We've already got a pretty nice bucket of other ideas that are swirling around. Also on Patreon business, quick shout out section to those who help pay for the hosting of the podcast. And so once again, thank you very much to Rob Jessup, our single and sole shout out member. Much appreciated as per usual. Right. So I think that's quite enough of me talking, perhaps forever. And so moving on to Returning Champions, where this is, again, the Elliot Page. I need to hurry up and read this section, but shut up, Elliot. Tell me, Andy, if you would, about Dead Demons DD Destruction Volume Number 4.
Yeah, so I don't know how I kind of missed that this had come out, but it appeared, I guess, quicker than I was expecting. So it's been kicking around for a few months, and I suddenly realized, like, wait, there's more of this, and I've not read it yet, and kind of kicked myself and duly fixed that terrible issue. There's not really too much that I want to say about Volume 4. If you want to kind of hear our thoughts on the series, like, you know, go back into the archives when we talked about Volume 1 and then find when we kind of talked about the latter Volumes 2 and 3 after that. Because Volume 4 still does all of the good things that we kind of praised in our previous discussions of this series. Like, the good news portion of this is that it's still exactly as good as it was before, and it's still... as good in all of the same ways as it was before. It's still hitting all of the notes that I enjoyed and still in just as an enjoyable way. I mean, the most interesting thing about Volume 4 is that it actually introduces a couple of new characters, which I was a little bit reticent about because it kind of jumped straight into their story, like right at the start of Volume 4. And I was kind of like feeling like, wait, are we just done with the other cast? Are they just going to be kind of like sidelined as unimportant now? But actually, no, like this volume does a really good job of introducing these two new characters who are basically not kind of Tokyo natives. They're kind of coming in from out in the sticks. And it's kind of interesting in both of their counts because clearly, like, given the whole weird alien invasion in inverted commas going on in Tokyo, like, there's a lot of kind of discussion directly to these characters in terms of, like, why do you want to go to Tokyo? Like, this is crazy. It's probably dangerous. you know, why not stay out here in the middle of nowhere where it's safe? And both of these characters have very different reasons for kind of wanting to get away from the status quo and kind of reinvent themselves in different ways. And they both turn out to be kind of pretty fascinating characters in that regard. Like, this volume doesn't go too deep in terms of that stuff, but it sets up plenty for it to get its teeth into moving forward if it so desires. And then it does a really good kind of organic job of introducing these two new characters to the existing cast. Like, they're basically all going to the same college, and they kind of all bump into each other in a pretty kind of, you know, reasonable way of just like, oh yeah, this is exactly the kind of dumb way that you sort of tend to fall in with people, especially around that kind of environment. And they kind of end up hanging out, and sort of, you know, the two new characters sort of get drawn into the sphere of the main cast as was. And they just kind of fit in really nicely because they both add different dimensions to things. And, you know, they kind of sit really well alongside the existing crew. So kind of come the end of volume four, it's like, oh, I actually have even more characters that I kind of like and I'm interested in, all kind of still circling around the whole kind of bigger picture that I'm also into. So overall, yeah, it's another really good volume, and I now have even more characters where I'm kind of like, oh man, like I hope it really gets to sort of dig deep into some of the stuff around these characters, because they've been set up in pretty interesting ways.
Yeah, totally. I think, yeah, that sounds like just more of what I want to see from that series. More interesting interactions. I mean, the series itself, like, I mean, hell, the end of volume three, I think, pretty much drops a giant bomb in front of you and says, yeah, here you go, this will explode at some point, but until then, keep reading. So, I mean, more of that is always welcome with this series of just, hey, you prepare for more of what you already enjoy, sucker. So,
yeah, absolutely, yeah. And volume four does also kind of drop another one of those bombs towards the end. Again, it's kind of stuff that has been set up and kind of teased out a little bit over the past couple of volumes. It kind of feels like that's all going to come together in a way where it's actually going to start sort of more directly kind of digging into it, which it's perhaps, again, one of those things where I'm a little bit like, oh, I hope it doesn't kind of fudge this stuff, because it's maybe some of the less interesting aspects of it. But given everything else the series has done this far, I'm more than willing to give it plenty of rope to potentially hang itself with, because I suspect it will probably create some kind of magnificent thing with it instead.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think even all the stuff around, you know, the military response to the aliens in particular, the whole, you know, we talked before, I think, in our initial discussion about, you know, the various satires and discussions of military-industrial complex, and that's not really going away. At least it wasn't at the end of volume three. And having that constantly around the edges still gives it a nice, interesting source. I fully intend to pick this up and read it when I can free myself from somehow being addicted to prison school? Question mark. We haven't talked about that on the podcast. I don't think I'm going to quite force that on you yet, Andy. So yeah, fair warning. but yeah, so in between everything else, I really want to get back to this at some point. Cause yeah, it sounds like exactly what I want to read. Cool. But yeah, so that's, more Deaded Demons. I still mean to read volume three of Voyage Hotel. I got around to buying it, but not reading it yet. So I'm halfway there. I mean, yeah, I've already basically halfway read it.
You know? Yeah, baby steps.
Yeah, one thing at a time. Do you want to take the lead on your pick for this episode, Andy, if you don't mind?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. Yeah, so my pick for this show was the first volume of Alice and Zolaku, which is a series that I watched a couple of years back in its anime adaptation form and was kind of surprisingly taken by. Like, it's one of those shows where I picked up the first episode just because I was at the long-running point in my life where I was basically watching at least the first episode of everything, and kind of went into it with zero expectation and came away being like, oh, I need to watch more of this. This seems real interesting. And I actually kind of enjoyed it all the way through. It did a lot of good things. And so I was curious to see the source material and see how it stacked up. And if I were to give an elevator pitch, I guess, for Alice and Zolaku, I'd probably say it's basically Elfin Lied only good.
Wow, dude. Whoa.
Because it kind of hits the same kind of basic points. So the starting point of the whole thing is that there is a girl who is of unknown age, but it's guessed that she's kind of around 10 years old. who has a special power, and she's one of a group known as Alice's Dreamers, and they're basically girls who have the ability to create anything from their imagination. And so most of these Alice's Dreamers are kind of quite limited in terms of what they can actually create. There are only kind of specific things that they can do. But the main character is what is known within the series as the Red Queen, in inverted commas, in that she can create anything at all. Like, as long as she has sort of the energy and the will to do so, she can kind of make it come to life. Of course, given that power, she is basically kind of locked away as a group of girls that are being experimented on by some organization of unknown origin, who are clearly kind of interested in this ability, most likely for some kind of like military ends or whatever. And she's had enough of it, so she manages to escape and goes on the run. And she ends up kind of coming across this pretty curmudgeonly old man, the Zoraku of the show's title, who kind of isn't really particularly interested in this weird girl who's there in a convenience store, who kind of starts spouting a bunch of stuff at him. But he kind of gets dragged along into an attempt to kind of drag this girl kind of back to the lab, because some of these other Alice's Dreamers have kind of been unleashed to bring her home, in inverted commas. And so kind of he ends up falling in with her and ends up basically inviting her to stay with him, while they both kind of figure out what to do next, because the girl, who it turns out is named Sana, kind of wants to go back and free her friends from this lab and kind of destroy the lab using her powers. And Zoraku is kind of like the most interesting part of this series, in a sense, because I feel like you could kind of throw a net over like a dozen different series that have kind of a similar general cadence to this, of like girl with magical powers who's, you know, been imprisoned because of that and is experimented on, escapes. But usually at that point, they kind of run into some kind of like, you know, teenage main character who's like, oh, I'll help you no matter what. And yeah, we'll use your powers to like, you know, to get revenge, to save the day, to do whatever. But this is very different, simply because like she ends up falling in with this kind of like this adult who has a very grown-up viewpoint on the whole thing. So like, for starters, pretty much from the get-go, he's like, right, you need to stop using these powers because they're dangerous. Like, you can knock that off. And secondly, like, let's get rid of all this nonsense about you going back and rescuing your friends. Like, this is a grown-up problem. We need to talk to the grown-ups about this. And it kind of, it follows a sort of a cadence that kind of goes against a lot of the norms for this kind of series, because they then go to said grown-ups and go to kind of like the powers that be, who don't just kind of throw it out as just like, no, this just sounds like nonsense, this can't be real. Like, they come at it from the angle of like, yeah, there is this weird lab and there's definitely some nefarious stuff going on here, so this all adds up, and okay, we will like help you and investigate this. And there's something very sort of pleasing about that, the kind of the weird reality that sits alongside like this very blatant kind of like fictional premise of just like, actually all the grown-ups in this series acts in a way that actual grown-ups should, and for the most part do, rather than the kind of the standard anime and manga trappings of like, oh no, like the grown-ups don't care, so it's up to the kids to fix all of this stuff. And yeah, I know
me, the 17-year-old who has mysteriously got a bank account and my house to myself.
Yeah,
I will
exactly
help you, Moe Chan-chan, get your revenge on the evil people.
Yeah, so yeah. There's something that I really like about that, is just like, it just feels a lot more grounded, and it kind of makes for a more interesting series, because it introduces a lot more elements, rather than just the like, oh yeah, well, the girl with magic is going to have to figure out how to use this to win the day. It's like, no, actually there's a whole bunch of other kind of like, you know, plate spinning here. It's not just this simple like, oh yeah, I can just do this and save the world kind of thing. And I know that's something that I feel like that's the main thing that really kind of entertained me about this series, kind of above and beyond the so many kind of shows that fit into the exact same mold otherwise.
Yeah, despite my initial mockery, I think your elfin lead but not hot garbage is basically on the money, but also less spiteful, which is the main thing about elfin lead that drives me nuts. But the one thing about this, so I came into this not knowing a single damn thing about it, like at all. So when I first looked at the cover, I thought, oh, it's going to be like Barakamon or something. You know, precocious child meets up with old gentleman. They both laugh and learn. And then it's like, oh, this is not what I thought at all. Like, what's going on? Like, from the very first page, when it's like Sana on top of a skyscraper in medical scrubs, it's like, what? Is she going to commit suicide and he saves her? And then they discover the meaning of life. No, it's still a sci-fi thing. It took a while for it to kind of drill down. I will say, I feel like this entire first volume was an awfully lot of ramp up. Hearing you discuss the series actually makes me feel a lot more like politely inclined towards it, because for most of this first volume, I was waiting for the meat of it to get going. Because when you start, you get Zoriko, who is kind of very vaguely defined initially, and it kind of leads you on this extended merry dance about making you think he's some kind of fixer or mafioso or something for like a good half the volume. And it drags that out, and you don't know what his deal is, because he's clearly well connected. He has all the markings of this. And no, he's just an honorary florist who works around Shinjuku, who is well known because he is just someone who's been around for a long time. And then whether, you know, he wants to or anyone else wants to, he's part of the community. And so, while that was nice when it was all finally revealed and shown, I was like, oh, this is an interesting character. This is much better. Like, I'd rather this. But it took so long to get there. Oh my God. And I was like having to furiously keep rewriting my expectations and interest in the series as I went. Because like I say, I was still like, what's going on with this series? Like, what is the actual thrust of it? And I couldn't get that until, again, like once they actually sit down and chat and say, okay, what's going on? What are all these powers? Why are those two girls after you? Why are there pigs everywhere suddenly? So yeah, it took me a while to get into the series, and it's, to be fair, not until sitting down here to talk about it, it's really all kind of gelled for me. I didn't know it had an anime. That explains a few things. But yeah, it was a really weird series to go into without even reading the synopsis, which frankly is probably on me, but made it for a more wild sort of reading. I mean, one thing you say about the adults in particular is that, you know, everyone has their own schedules. Like Zoriko has his florist shop to look after. The adults can't do things immediately, and they cannot immediately turn on a dime and deploy all of their energies in a single direction because they've got jobs. Like the police officer who clearly knows Zoriko and is friends with him is like, hey, I can't, like, I trust you and all the people we had as eyewitnesses, but there's no physical evidence of anything that you reported happening to your poor Minnie. Very nice Minnie. So it's very difficult to pin that down, but there's clearly something amiss here, so we're going to kind of follow with it. And also the same thing with kind of Sana's powers, where it's like, okay, clearly there are powers, you know, capital P powers involved here, but I feel like it kind of keeps it elastic for as long as it can until it actually has to report what they are. And then when it does its little quick flashback, it gets real grim real fast as well. Like there's like an undercurrent of like really intense grimness to the setting and some of the stuff going on, but I'm not sure if it's supposed to be there, or if I'm hallucinating it. But yeah, there's like a weird threat under the base covers of this series that make it feel a little uncomfortable, especially when it is just like, you know, psychic girl hungry, psychic girl in funny dress, psychic girl want udon, you know. So it's a little bit of a strange whiplash, at least for me on that part.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in terms of like the pacing side of it, it's one of those things where like I almost wish I could kind of wipe my brain of the anime and just kind of read the manga site unseen like you did, because yeah, like I quite like the slow burn of it, and because I guess I enjoy the characters and kind of the way it ekes things out in it quite a lot, like especially around Zoriku. Like I really enjoy the way it kind of plays him up as plays with kind of the reader's expectations of what he's going to be, and then says like, oh no, he's just a flower arranging dude. You know, that I find that really pleasing. But I quite like a lot of the kind of slow burn parts about this first volume, because I feel like they do let you kind of sit alongside the various characters for long enough to kind of to get some kind of connection to them. And again, maybe that is something that follows through more in kind of subsequent volumes, where it actually kind of you get some payout from that in terms of like caring about these characters and what happens to them, because of course stuff is going to happen to them in future volumes. That ain't too much of a spoiler.
Yeah, I think my main sort of like problem with it, I suppose, is that the first chapter is, you know, as is typical, it's got to set its entire stall out and get you to keep reading it from chapter one. But the first chapter is like 90 odd pages, and most of it feels like redirection or just like putting up fake walls and wallpaper rather than actually telling you anything important or anything for certain. So the whole thing with Zoroko and what his role is, and then Sana keep popping up and down, and it makes it very tiring, because then when you get to the quote-unquote real bit, when it's actually like laying out what's happening, I feel like I have to like unlearn and relearn the manga and kind of start almost afresh halfway through the volume to kind of get used to it. I mean, if anything, like, I was really engaged for the first chapter. My notes for this are like mostly on the first chapter going, oh, wow, this happened. Oh, wow, there's a thing here. Oh, wow. And then I kind of stopped taking notes because it was getting ridiculous. And then suddenly it goes from chapter two with, oh, pigs, ... Sanae, who is Zoroko's granddaughter, looks like a Yushiki character. And that's my last note. Like, that's kind of it. It's just like, oh, boosh, there we go, end of volume. So it was kind of wild.
Yeah. I mean,
especially with the grim backstory section, which is all, it's weird as well, because all the actual background, once it actually lays it out, like, Zoroko's a florist, she's a weird experiment, psychic girl, that's all cool, but it left me hanging for so long, waiting for something to grip onto, that it was really exhausting.
Yeah, I think it's kind of weird in the way that it kind of stop starts some of that explanation as well. Like, I feel like around Sana there are a multitude of kind of different moments where she sort of starts to talk about something and then something else happens and kind of cuts things off and it kind of moves elsewhere. So I can totally see where you're coming from on that. It certainly makes sense. And yeah, it does feel weirdly like, I really like the character designs in this series, but they do feel like they all probably belong to a different show, like a Barakamon or a Yu Yu Shiki or something in between the two. Like, it's the weird thing, I think, about the visual style of the volume as a whole, is like, I both like it and also feel like it maybe doesn't always achieve what it sets out to. Like, I find myself going weirdly back and forth and like, no, this looks really good, but also sometimes it looks really crowded and overly busy and you can't quite figure out what's going on. And the character designs are great, but they're also maybe not, don't always fit in with what you're trying to do. And it's kind of, I can't decide which side of that fence I come down on in terms of like how it looks.
Yeah, I must admit, I do quite like it. Like, it draws a mini well. Some of the more fantastical elements look nice, but oftentimes it's hard to know like a sense of place. Like, at one point Zoroko is basically driving out of a multi-story car park, but because you don't see him doing any of that, he's just in a car 1 minute and then he's in the car but somewhere else, and it's like, hang on, what happened there? One important thing, Zoroko, because he has a big old bushy mustache, you never see his mouth, which I don't know, I quite like as like a grumpy old man thing where he's just talking through his mustache the whole time. Also, Sana's dress must be a complete nightmare to draw constantly, because oof, jeez.
Yeah.
I'm crazy outfit.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's why they like change her into a different set of clothes, like pretty sharpish. It's like, no, I'm done drawing this. Like, she needs to wear something else now.
So, ow, cramp, ow. But yeah, I like some of the art, but as you say, sometimes I feel quite cramped, because it feels like it's trying to cram an awful lot in to when it doesn't need to be there, if that makes sense. Where it's like, okay, I just need you to actually, my main complaint is just that I wanted to sit me down and explain things to me. And while it did do that, it took its sweet time and also spread it really thinly. Like, as you say, like, there's multiple places where there's a place to like lay out a fact or two of the world, but then they have to go through like Sana once again refusing to apologize, Zoroko getting upset at her. Oh, we better eat something, so let's have some fried rice. And it's like, nice stuff, but at the same time, it's like, no, you haven't gotten the other thing out of the way yet. Like, you haven't finished the setup for me to care about this yet. Is a weird complaint and sort of like a feed me master sort of thing. But it's a weird series. I must admit, I don't think I'll be continuing it. Do you see, I mean, you said you already read the anime, you already watched the anime, Andy, so is this something you want to continue?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of tempted to. I mean, it's one of those things where like my curiosity is mostly like, how much of the manga did the anime adapt? Like, is there a lot more like post that I'd be into? Because it's one of those series where like, I feel like the anime was actually a pretty good kind of point for point adaptation of the manga. Like having read this first volume, it's like, okay, yeah, this, it's a really good solid adaptation that kind of hits all of the right notes. So I don't feel like I'll necessarily get anything more out of reading the rest of the manga. But obviously when it goes on beyond the, at the point of the anime, it's like, I'd probably be interested in seeing where it heads. So I'm on the fence. Like, I certainly wouldn't be against the idea of reading more of it. Like, I did really enjoy reading this volume, and I like a lot about the series. So I may well carry on with it. Certainly, like, if it comes up in a sale or something, I'll probably grab some more of it.
Yeah, yeah. Because I think it's currently, like, I think I saw 6 or 7 volumes available at the moment. So it's currently ongoing still. So yeah. maybe once we figure out where it kind of leaves off on the anime. I feel like I've been a massive downer, but it does seem cool with the whole, like, you know, psychic powers battle thing, with its own strange angle on it, but also like a certain amount of mundanity to it, you know, of like, hey, you've still got to eat, kid, and you can't just go fleet slinging anchors around everywhere, all right?
So yeah. I think, I mean, it kind of conversely, that is like one of the things I really like about the series is that it kind of does juxtapose the kind of like, oh yeah, like I've got superpowers, with like, oh, like ordinary life also has to happen. I mean, it's like probably one of the best lines Sana has is like, you know, she's sat in this restaurant with Zoriko, and she kind of, when she finally starts to explain that, like, you know, I have these powers and this is what these powers are, and like, here's what I want to do, like, I want to save my friends, and then she kind of follows that up with like, but I'm just a kid, so I basically can't really do anything useful, which is why I'm sat here right now. And it's kind of like, I feel like that pretty much sums up the series of just like, hey, yeah, you have these individuals with these incredible powers, but also they're just kids, so they can't really do anything on their own, or if they do, they're just going to make an unholy mess of it.
Yeah, plus, like, from the little bits we see of, like, the background of the people who were imprisoning Sana, they probably are aware of and or have their own, they have their own countermeasures ready to sort of meet that if need be. Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, yeah, I was originally quite down on it, mostly because of my own weird missed expectations, but it was an interesting read. You know, it was certainly like kind of wild, especially towards the end when it's like kind of firing on all cylinders and you're invested in the characters and you know what the vague shape of everything is, and it's like, okay, I see what happens, you know. So
and I mean, I will say, like, from what I've seen of the anime, like, it does continue to have those darker undertones, like, throughout the series as well. Like, that is something that it continues to kind of, it's not afraid to kind of revisit its dark side and to kind of keep that ongoing alongside the kind of, you know, the more slice of lifey stuff that it does. And it does continue to juxtaposition those two things. So again, like, if that doesn't work for folks, then, like, you know, that's probably going to continue to be there as a bugbear. But again, it's kind of one of the things that I kind of like about it, that it manages to balance those two things in a surprisingly good way for me.
Yeah, and it's not all grim, because it also espouses the wonder of pancakes. So, you know.
Yeah, pancakes and piglets. It's all good.
What's going to happen to those pigs? Oh dear. Jeez.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, that in itself is kind of like a slightly weird existential moment. Like, Sana creates all these pigs and like, wait, if I make living things, like, if I make them disappear, am I murdering them? And it's like, oh, this is, just eat your pancakes, Sana. Let's not go into that discussion right now.
Yeah, let's just skip that for a minute. Oh dear. But yeah, it seems interesting. So yeah, that's Alice and Zoriko. So moving on to my pick, which is Shonen Jump's Chainsaw Man. This is a currently recently started series available on Shonen Jump and Manga Plus, which is also like Viz related. It's got 17 chapters, as mentioned. No physical releases just yet. It's all on the Shonen Jump app if you want to read it. The author, it's Tatsuki Fujimoto, and I didn't know until I'd started espousing my enjoyment of this series, is that he's also the person responsible for Fire Punch, which is one of my most detested series ever. Which is a bit strong. I mean, I read the first volume and absolutely hated it, to a visceral degree, but I like this. So Chainsaw Man is about, Daiji, who is a worthless scumbag. He is a complete down and out, mostly not through his own fault. His dad dies for a huge debt to the Yakuza. The Yakuza say, hey, you gotta pay this money and we're gonna put it all on you, bucko. And so Daiji basically makes a pact with a nearby devil, which looks like a dog with a chainsaw coming out of its face. And he calls it Pochita because it looks like a dog. And they then live together in poverty in this weird sort of like odd couple relationships. Basically killing these things called devils, which are weird, like sort of phenomena. Like they look like classical devils of like really gross, weird, infected, like extreme versions. Like it's a tomato devil, and it's like a tomato with six eyes and a whole bunch of legs coming out of it. And they kind of like live on human blood and are generally up to no good. And sometimes even take over corpses, which is a real rough deal. But basically, to cut to the chase, Daiji, he is working for this mafia fixer. The mafia fixer lures him away, and they basically the mafia have traded themselves to a devil for power, except the devil has double-crossed them, because of course it has. It's a devil, idiot. And Daiji gets chopped into like 500 pieces and dumped in a dumpster. The devil, with its little life left, fuses with Daiji, and he's reborn, kind of. He's now basically half devil, half human, and has the ability to sprout chainsaws out of his body and become the titular chainsaw man, which is excruciatingly painful for him, but doesn't allow him to exact vengeance upon his enemies. So he manages to do just that, the whole vengeance exacting thing in chapter one, and ends up being basically kidnapped slash adopted slash grabbed by a member of the state Devil Hunters, who are a ragtag group, who of course gets picked up by the ragtag group of Devil Hunters working for the government, and told, hey, you know, you probably shouldn't be alive right now. Work for us or you'll get killed. So he's gone from one bad situation to another, but at least he's not dirt poor anymore. Well, he still is, but you know. And so it kind of goes through there where Daiji gets twinned up with partners who are also equally ridiculous or unhinged, and he tries to find a reason for why he's still alive, and tries to like spends a good amount of time fixated on the idea of fondlings and breasts, because he's a fucking teenager and an idiot, and like it becomes apparent that like a lot of people say to him, oh, didn't you go to school? And he's like, nope, I was working, I was too poor. And so he's basically this complete fish out of water who's been given every bum deal in the planet, but is still really glad for like actually being alive and having some form of autonomy, even within a very weird, strict sort of framework, which is what I enjoy about it, honestly, is that the main character is a shithead. Like, he's not a nice character and not a nice person, but he is doing what he can in this world and kind of carving his own space out. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about dreams and what you want to accomplish. And he basically says, look, I know my dreams ain't shit, but no one's going to stop me, all right? I'm going to do what I want. And it kind of goes from there. At the time of recording, 17 chapters in, they've got into their second major arc of trying to hunt down a devil which has taken over part of a hotel and has got them all stuck in like a closed loop situation, which is quite fascinating. But yeah, it's kind of wild where, much like Fire Punch, it sets up an entire world in its first chapter, in like its first 20 pages, and then skips straight past that to another like state of affairs. So it almost feels like there's a prequel manga that is ready to go if you need to. But yeah, I enjoy Chainsaw Man. I'm not going to say it's a great manga, but I'm very personally fond of it because it does a lot of stuff that I find interesting, where it takes the whole shonen hot blood element and hard work elements to its natural conclusion, which is main character's kind of selfish and a pillock, but will do what he wants and do what he needs to survive and to, you know, get his in the most sort of very self-effacing way. And everyone kind of tells him he's an idiot as a result, which he is. So whatever. But yeah, that's, Chainsaw Man in a nutshell. As I say, I'm a really big fan of it. I don't know what you thought about it, Andy, but I'm interested to see if you actually cared about it in the same degree. I know there's some detractors from this series.
Yeah, I mean, I went on a really weird journey, like, across the chapters of the series thus far, because I got a couple of chapters in, and at that point, I really disliked it. Like, I didn't like kind of the characters, I didn't like the art style. I mean, my note that I wrote at the time is like, this is like a charmless Blue Exorcist, which, having read through to the latest chapter, is really unfair. Like, I think there's still a certain amount of legitimacy to the Blue Exorcist kind of comparison, because there's definitely some crossover. But there's a weird point, kind of, I guess, like, maybe four chapters or so in, where I kind of turned around on the series without really figuring out exactly why. Like, suddenly the art style that was really off-putting to me started to kind of work and make sense. I kind of started to at least sympathize with the character somewhat and kind of like them despite them being idiots. And I really kind of got more invested in it. And then we reached a story arc that was just like nonstop boob jokes, which kind of overran its welcome and started to push me away for a bit. And then it got to the current kind of closed loop story arc that you mentioned, where I'm like way back on board with it again. So I've been on a real kind of roller coaster with this series. Like I when it's firing on all cylinders and kind of everything is working out, I'm really enjoying it. But there are also times where I'm like, why am I reading this? This is no good. And it's kind of like I've vacillated this way and that on it, but overall I've liked it. I think it's done more good stuff than it's done bad stuff. And I do really like its cast of characters at the end of the day. Like it's a really good example of how you can write characters that are flawed and all kind of terrible people in their own various ways, but they are still kind of characters you can sort of understand and sympathize with in certain ways. Like one of the kind of comparisons that I found kind of kicking about in my head a little bit is something like Black Lagoon, where you have characters who are ultimately bad people on a certain level. Like, you know, Revy in Black Lagoon is a bad person on a number of levels, but they are still a character that you kind of end up rooting for and sympathizing with and kind of understanding on other fundamental levels that means that you can kind of like cheer them on as characters. And I feel like Chainsaw Man is kind of that writ large, because in any other series, most of these characters, you'd be like, man, I hope something terrible happens to them because they're just awful and they're stupid. But there's something about them that kind of makes you just warm to them and be like, they're idiot goofballs and they're kind of terrible people. But I don't know. I still kind of like them. And there is something about that cast, especially once they all get together, especially again in this kind of closed loop situation where they're all just like dropped in together and you kind of, they're in a situation where, you know, you just get to see all of the worst sides of them. There is something about it that is very engaging that I can't quite put a finger on, but it definitely works.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, the main thing I like about it is that it is a bunch of characters who are kind of terrible, but they, you know, you can kind of see the track of where they're on. Like Aki, the main handler for Denji, the main male handler with a terrible, like, real weird little top knot. You know, you get his backstory and it's quite short and to the point, and it's quite, you know, sort of standard really as far as manga backstories go. But afterwards you're like, oh, this is why he's a raging arsehole. Like, oh, that explains it. Like, you know, it makes perfect sense. I mean, I think the character that I'm least, it sounds weird, but the character I'm least willing to trust is the main handler lady that looks after Denji. And I forget her name. I wrote it down for God's sake.
Makima.
Makima, that's it. Yeah, Makima is kind of the handler and, you know, is almost tricks Denji at the start to working for her. Although, you know, the choices were work for me or death. So she kind of made the choice for him. But she's the one I have the least sort of input on knowing what her deal is. And it's clearly something else going on because she gets involved in all the politicking discussions that thankfully the rest of the series kind of keeps away. The one thing I will say is it reminds me vaguely of another, this is not a direct comparison because I actually think this other series is bad, is Fire Force, which is the creation of the Soul Eater mangaka, which has some of the same ideas where it's a world where strange phenomena occur and some people have powers and some people, you know, there are people who fight against this and there's politicking in the background. But then, oh no, the politicking becomes obscene and stupid and takes over everything and Fire Force is bad. But this series kind of handles it much better because the characters are far more interesting and it kind of keeps things moving. I mean, this is going to sound real dumb and I probably shouldn't try and pick this fight, but I honestly think that Denji going about boobs constantly is annoying, but I think the series itself is telling something else in that you know, Denji has been so fucking cut loose for so long that, you know, his idea of heaven was, I'm going to get some bread and put a bunch of jam on it. And that was his, like, goal in life for a while. And then he did it in the one of the most comical panels in the manga, where he put tons of crap on a piece of bread and made a complete mess. And then he just moves on to the next thing, which he needs to find a reason for living. And it turns into, well, it'd be nice to cop a feel, I guess. And, like, I know, you know, having a character constantly go boobs, 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 boob, 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 boobs is annoying. And hell, I've been reading bloody prison school, so I know. But I feel like it's just a misplaced idea of praxis, or, like, putting himself into action. But, of course, it goes for tits. So, and I think the main thing is that he comes out of it going, well, that was highly disappointing. That sucked. Don't want to do that again. And then I was hoping the series would move in more of a concrete direction that would, you know, sort of actualize, Denji. But then, you know, Makima kind of shoves him back into this weird bondage state, which again seems kind of mean. Like, she seems to be the character who is stringing him along the most, and causing him the most unhealthy problems.
Yeah.
So that's where I come down on the Denji likes tits thing, which is, yes, he does, but it's not his fault.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, like, although kind of I got tired of kind of like the specifics of that, like I do like what it's going for in the broader sense, because, yeah, like, as well as kind of the point you've just made, like, there's a pretty obvious kind of subversion of the typical kind of shonen tropes there as well, where the main character has to have this grandiose, like, I'm gonna kill all the titans, or I'm gonna kill the devil, or whatever kind of your shonen kind of ultimate goal in life is. Like, it's always some kind of grandiose massive thing, where, like, yeah, Denji is just the complete opposite of that. It's like, I don't actually have any life goals, because I haven't had a life up until now, basically. So I don't know, like, I'm just gonna aim low, and, you know, I'm just gonna get my kicks where I can. And that is actually enjoyable in itself. Like, I think it could probably have just been a bit more streamlined in terms of how it used that, and could probably have gotten away with it, because I was sort of on board with it for most of that arc, and then it just kind of overstayed its welcome just a little bit too long. And then I think kind of pulling it back in then to Makima, kind of basically, you know, using him in the same way, kind of like, you know, using her sexuality against him, just also kind of pushed it over the edge a little bit. But yeah, like, in its broadest sense, like, I'm on board with what it was trying to do there. And I will say, like, this is a really funny series. Like, it has so many good, dumb one-liners, like, especially the latest chapter, like, well, you have Power and Denji just kind of, like, trapped in this hotel block. Like, there are just so many dumb things being spouted that made me laugh in the latest chapter. And that's kind of definitely one of the things that has won me over and kept me coming back. Cause, like, I just want to see what nonsense these characters spout next, because it's kind of great.
Yeah. Power's kind of amazing. But also perhaps the single most terrible character. I mean, she can't be bad because she likes cats, but also does some of the most reprehensible shit on the regular, at, like, saying, hey, I don't flush when I go to the toilet. And they're like, what? No, you should do that. Like, come on, don't be a jerk. You know, and also, I don't know, she feels like sort of Asuka from Evangelion on 600 kinds of drugs almost, like just off to the races. Asshole beyond any kind of scope. One thing to mention, I completely have been skipping over, like, you mentioned not liking the art. I'll admit I vacillate on the art. I feel like the imagination it has on screen is amazing, but sometimes it gets lost in how rough it can look. The quality in between different panels can vary wildly, which especially is the case of the first chapter, because there's so many pages to draw. And it kind of goes all over the shop in terms of quality, but it does have a crazy amount of imagination, especially when you have, like, the devils, and, you know, the main character's main ability is that he causes chainsaws to explode out of his body. And Power has the ability to, like, generate weapons out of blood, and all these sort of weird, crazy things of, like, it doesn't over-egg it, but it still keeps a certain amount of interest and crazy kineticism to the fighting. While also making it very clear that every single character involved is a massive glass cannon and is likely to die at the moment anything goes wrong. Which is kind of what's so fun about it so far, is that, like, oh yeah, they can kill devils, but, ugh, you know, body count might be high. So it's a really good page as well, where they're fighting this bat demon who basically launches a sound cannon, and it just decimates a city block, and it looks really cool on the page.
Yeah, yeah. Like some of its big set piece moments like that, and I think a lot of its kind of action set pieces work really well. Like even when it's a bit rough and ready, it kind of fits the aesthetic of just like, hey, there's a shitload of stuff going on here, so of course everything's going to be just really sketchy and all over the place because crazy stuff is going on, and that side of things I think is what won me over on kind of the visual side, because you know when it's being a bit kind of scratchy and rough for just kind of no particular reason, it feels less pleasing. But now I think it's kind of, I feel like it's locked in its character designs in a way that kind of like that works, and it doesn't go off model at all. And yeah, then when it pushes the boat out for the action stuff, then it really, really hits the right notes.
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of like, it kind of uses the rough artistic style along with making things look really gross. Like even regular people in the backdrop of this look kind of gross and just worn out and tired and a bit sweaty. And, you know, all of it looks rough and gross. Like even in the hotel, it looks a bit, you know, worn out. And I feel like the art style kind of works to that, except when, you know, when you do have too much going on and suddenly it's like, oh, this looks a bit of a mess. But yeah, I feel like Chainsaw Man does enough stuff to make me really interested, and it has enough ideas that, again, keep me really interested. It kind of has a lot of rope with which to hang itself now. It's gotten 17 chapters in, and I'm still really interested in how they get out of their current, like, weird, stupid situation. It has an interesting, like, longer form plotline they're clearly building towards that's appeared in the most recent, sort of chapters, and it's starting to pull together different themes. It's like, oh, well, you know, devils aren't just arbitrary. They're based upon human fear. And, you know, if something powerful becomes a devil, that's a powerful devil because the more people fear it, the stronger it is, et cetera, et cetera. You know, there is like an undergirding to all of this, which still exists. Even when you've got, you know, main character kind of just wandering around in the foreground going, oh, I sure would like a donut. So, you know, I kind of give it a lot of rope on the whole boob jokes element by seeing that as a really bad, as like a kind of a mishandled like theme, but maybe I'm giving it too much credit. Who knows? I do enjoy this though. It's a very, at the very minimum, it's a good Shonen Jump style read of like, oh, new chapter's out. Right. 19 pages done. Something stupid happened. Cool. So
yeah, I mean, it's another really good example of kind of what the new Shonen Jump, you know, pricing model. Like, it makes reading a series like this really easy. Like, this is a series, if I was having to buy it volume by volume, I'd maybe still be a bit like, oh, I'll wait to see what Elliot thinks when like another volume or so comes out, because you know, I've still been like, you know, always in terms of both positive and negative on this, but like, you know, for my $1.99 monthly subscription, like, yeah, I'm going to keep reading this every week, because why wouldn't I?
I got to admit, if this was only on volumes, I would not have touched this with a 40-foot barge pole, because I did not like Fire Punch whatsoever. And so, like, would not have given this a time of day, quite frankly. And so more shame me for liking this now and finding out after the fact. I'm like, oh, this guy did Fire Punch. Fuck. So, yeah, I know I keep ragging on it, but man, I hated that series. But yeah, I do enjoy Chainsaw Man. At the very least, I think you can read the first chapter, and if it's a fun self-contained romp, and if at the end of it you're like, well, I'm good, you're going to be good, frankly. But yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it's certainly worth kind of burning through a bit of it, because I feel like once Chainsaw Man becomes Chainsaw Man, like it does change up enough that it's probably worth at least getting to that point and seeing how you go. Because certainly had I just like done a one chapter appraisal, I would have just been like, nope, I'm out. This is not hitting any of the things I wanted to.
Maybe chapter four then, because that's when you start to get other characters interacting with him.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's once you get a wider cast and you kind of start to get a better feel for what it's going for in the whole, like that was definitely the point where I find myself turning around on it without even really kind of being cognizant of what it was doing and why it was interesting me all of a sudden. I just suddenly kind of like felt my mood lift of like, oh no, actually I'm kind of getting into this now. And
it was that page where he kicks that guy in the junk 20 times, wasn't it?
Yeah, you got me. That's
I love that page. It's so stupid.
Yeah, and in a sense, like, I think actually that is kind of it as well. Like, that was a point that made me realize, like, oh, this is very kind of self-aware of what it is as well. Like, it's as much as it's very willing to kind of like depict a bunch of the stuff that goes on in the series seriously, like it definitely knows that it is kind of dumb and goofy at the same time. And like it lets that out in its characters, and it lets that out in the things that happen in the right places and in the right ways that entertains me. And the kind of a mixture of those sort of dumb moments and some of the ridiculous things that come out of Power's mouth in particular are definitely the things that kind of keep me coming back. So it's like, this idiot's going to say something that makes me laugh at some point and make me hit the screenshot button, because I'll probably find a good excuse to tweet this at some point.
I feel like that's the two things it does in particular well, is hilarious chainsaw based violence and Power being awful. That's a point, actually. I'm even when I've already read this before and rereading it, I'm like, man, this is violent. I always forget how violent it is.
Yeah, who'd have thought a series called Chainsaw Man would involve such violence?
I do like the self-awareness where, like, Daiji at one point says, hey, yeah, these things hurt. Like, I feel it, you know. When I make chainsaws explode out of my body, it does, in fact, hurt. So,
yeah, which again is one of those things that so many other shonen manga kind of don't bother with. Like, you have character with superpowers that should clearly do them some damage themselves, and you know, it always kind of writes around that. Whereas this is just a very blasé. It's like, yeah, this kind of sucks for me too, by the way.
Yeah, there is a really good fight actually in the middle of this set where like Denji is worn out and doesn't have any power left, and so he tries to activate like chainsaw mode basically. But he can't, and he has like half a chainsaw popping out of his skull, and like he gets mocked by the enemy. He's like, "Oh, so fat lot of good you are, eh?" And he goes, I don't care. I want to stay alive. I'm going to headbutt you with my chainsaw head." And you know, then they continue to fight because it's really stupid. That's a really dumb fight. I love it. It's so dumb. But yeah, so that's Chainsaw Man. Pretty wild as it turns out. But yeah, you know, well worth a look if you've got your Shonen Jump a go go. Cool. So moving on, what are we going to talk about next episode? I have decided to nominate for next reading O Maidens in Your Savage Season, Volume 1, written by Mario Carda, of Macria, I think, at the moment. It sounds good and daft from the synopsis, so I'm interested to see what this is about. I know nothing else, honestly. I picked it because the cover looks interesting and the names. Whoops.
Cool. I mean, you sold me on the Mario Kart part, so I'm all for it.
Yeah.
So my choice, similarly, I've kind of picked on author's name above all else here, because I've picked the first volume of Dead Mount Death Play, which is a newish manga from Ryogo Narita, the author of Bakano and Jirara.
Oh, blimey. Okay, blimey. I didn't know that. Yeah, I keep seeing this. Like, I think I keep seeing this like manga like off, like kind of on page two almost. Like, it's always the like weird bridesmaids arena manga when it's discussed or sort of shown up on a store. So yeah, I'll have a little look at that, as well as previously mentioned, the light novel Do You Love Your Mom and Her Two-Hit Multi-Target Attacks. But you've got to be a Patreon subscriber to listen to that one. So moving into Clones Down, you can find all our previous episodes on our website, screentone.club. Podcast can be found on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all the good stuff. If you like the podcast, tweet about it, tell a friend. That stuff really, really helps. Thank you to everyone who has sent us kind words. And ratings and reviews, if you feel like leaving one, are very greatly appreciated. They really help with like discoverability. You can also tweet at us at Screentone Club on the Twitters. And you can also email us, show@screentone.club. No one's actually ever used that yet, and I wasn't expecting anyone to actually do so. But if you fancy, you can be the first person to email it. I don't know, whatever. We'll probably read it on the show. On a personal note, I'm Elliot Page. You can find me at Elliot Page on Twitter, where I am posting mostly cat pictures. Also, I have finally pseudo relaunched, Manga Search, Manga S-E-A-E, oh, how do I spell? Manga SEARCH.CH. Oh my god. There's a link on the website, sorry. Which I finally got back up and running again after poleaxing my code for a while. Whoops. So yeah, you can use that to find places to buy legal digital manga in the UK. Hooray. Which the reason I made it is so I could use it myself. And Andy, how about you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter, at Hannah's1979.
Cool. So thank you very much for listening, everyone. And we will speak to you again for our next episode in 2 weeks, just before the end of April. Oh, my God. Where's all the month gone, Andy? Where's the year gone?
I wish I knew.
Oh, anyway, good night.
Bye, everyone.